25 years ago, the largest documented waterborne disease outbreak in U.S. history occurred in Milwaukee. It sickened more than 400,000 people. It killed at least 69 people. After the outbreak had subsided, Milwaukee officials pledged never again. We're talking about threats to water quality in both urban and rural areas of Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's bring in Dave Strifling. He directs Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. He's one of the organizers of a half-day water conference at Marquette on April 17th. It's titled Lake Michigan and the Chicago Megacity in the 21st Century. Dave, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're marking, 25 years ago, 69 people died during the Cryptosporidium outbreak in the Milwaukee area. More than 400,000 people sick. Multiple teams of scientists and government officials worked together to trace the contaminated water. Then Milwaukee Health Commissioner Paul Nanas said today's issues in Milwaukee need that same level of cooperation and resources. Let's listen.
Water and public health reside in separate jurisdictions within government, but they need to be connected and talk to each other.
What do you think of that? Is he right, or is it that simple to make those connections?
Well, it's not simple, and that's the problem. I think he's absolutely right that we need a holistic approach to address some of these issues. You take the lead and water issue that Milwaukee and many other communities are facing today, and that requires input from engineers and public health specialists and physicians and scientists and policymakers working together. And it can be possible to bring those folks to the table for a discussion, but getting any action out of it is a much tougher question. But overall, I think he's absolutely right.
Milwaukee's lead poisoning prevention programs have come under scrutiny in recent months, and reports that the department failed to serve the families of children who tested positive for lead. They also made headlines this week when Mayor Tom Barrett and the attorney for about 170 lead-poisoned children alleged that the paint industry is trying to shift blame from their products for contaminated water. What generally are the sources of lead in water?
Historically, the CDC has always said that lead paint is the leading source of lead in children's bloodstreams. Soil has also been identified in addition to water, which at last, water has really been, in awareness and knowledge of the risks of lead in water has really risen in the past couple of years. But the reality is, when you look at a child with elevated levels of lead in the bloodstream, and really the experts tell us there is no safe level of lead to have in a child's blood. But that lead doesn't have markers attached to it, of course, that say, I'm from lead paint, or I'm from water, or I'm from soil. We just don't know. So I think it, again, makes sense to have a broader strategy that addresses all of those potential sources.
So it's really not possible to track where specifically or what percentage the lead contamination, where that lead contamination has come from in Milwaukee or any community for that matter?
Not in the general sense. I think if you had an individual child that you were trying to study, you could go into that person's home environment and try to figure out, well, is there chipping lead paint in this housing unit? Do they have a lead lateral that's serving this housing unit? Is there contaminated soil in the area? And you could do a study of the individual situation, but in the general sense, excuse me, that's very difficult to do.
And when you say a lead lateral, you're meaning the water service lines to that home.
Right. That's what makes this so difficult, is that it's a split ownership problem. So in Milwaukee, for example, none of the pipes that are under the water mains under the streets that deliver water to your home, none of those are made out of lead, and the water from Lake Michigan doesn't have lead in it. Where this comes in is the lateral pipe that splits off from the main to serve your home may be made out of lead, and that lateral is owned by the city up to the property line, but then it's owned by the private homeowner from the property line to the home. So historically, what we had seen in some instances was cities replacing their portion of the lead lateral up to the property line, but not replacing the homeowner's portion, which was on private property. That practice was called partial replacement, partial service line replacement. And Milwaukee has abandoned that practice now, because when you do that, it can have very negative effects, because the impacts of the construction can shake lead loose from the private side of the lateral. And also, some scientists think there can even be a reaction between the copper lateral or other new materials that you put in and the existing lead lateral, which also can cause corrosion on the inside of that pipe. So really what you want to do now is replace the full lateral. The problem, of course, has been convincing the homeowner to do that from a financial standpoint. This can be quite expensive. And one of the good things I think Milwaukee has done, Milwaukee gets maligned for a lot of things, some of it rightly so, but one of the good things Milwaukee has done is instituted a program where the city will help the landowner pay a healthy percentage of that cost to replace the lead service lateral. I think that's a pretty innovative program.
So what kind of dollars are we talking about here? How much does it cost to replace the lateral, and how much will Milwaukee foot the bill?
So it depends on the length. Milwaukee has passed an ordinance, and I believe the city is picking up on the order of 50 to 75% of the cost, which typically leaves the homeowner with about $1,500 to pay. It's going to differ in different situations, different construction requirements for individual situations. But the fact that the city is picking up any portion of the cost is pretty unusual on a nationwide basis. And again, I think that's one of the good things that the city is doing. But it can be easily run into the multiple thousands to replace one of these laterals, again, depending on length and the construction conditions that are encountered.
Just joining us, we're talking with Dave Strifling. He's director of Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. You can join in with your questions, water quality questions at 800-642-1234, policy questions as well. Milwaukee residents, how are you dealing with concerns over lead in your water? How has it impacted your family? What about your schools? Wisconsinites, are you afraid to drink your water? How are you getting water if you aren't drinking what's coming out of the tap? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Dave, you talked a little bit here about what Milwaukee has done well in handling its lead poisoning, picking up a part of the bill. Where does Milwaukee have room to improve?
Well, I think even the city would admit that their information that they've given to the public has at times been less than transparent. The failings in the health department are well known in terms of failing to follow up with children who have tested positive for lead. Before 2016 or so, the city was engaging in some construction practices near areas known to have lead laterals that could shake lead loose from the pipes. So I think really the work that the city needs to do is on being completely transparent with residents about what the risks are and what they can do to address them. And I think positive steps have been made in the last 6 months to a year to do that. And, you know, the other thing that I think the city struggled with at the beginning but has made progress on now is having a comprehensive plan to replace all these laterals eventually. We're talking about 75,000 lead laterals in Milwaukee. That's close to 50% of all the laterals in the city. It's a huge undertaking. I don't think that anyone believes the city has $750 million to replace all of these, and that's what the estimated cost has been. But there has to be some kind of plan in place to have a comprehensive program to begin attacking this problem. And again, I think that's that's somewhere where the city has made progress. Jennifer Gonda, who's the superintendent of Milwaukee Water Works, is trying to put a plan in place to increase the number of replacements that they're doing every year. And they've targeted schools and child care centers, daycare centers for the first replacements. I think that makes sense. But they're replacing, I think by 2020, the plan is something like 1,000 laterals a year. So you can do the math. It's going to take a long, long time to get this problem solved at the current pace. And, you know, the other piece of this is even if you replace all those lead laterals, as has been done in Madison, we still see reports of elevated lead in water, and that can happen as a result of lead fixtures and plumbing within individual homes that the city can't get to. So even if you replace all the lead laterals, you still may have
issues. Yeah.
And of course, that doesn't address the paint issue and the soil issues.
And let's pause right there with Dave Strifling. He directs Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. Your questions, your perspectives are welcome. 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation after a news update on the Ideas Network. The national average for lead poisoning is about 3%, but in Milwaukee, more than 11% of children in 2016 suffered from lead poisoning. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett has said lead from paint is the city's main concern since lead-based paint is in at least 100,000 homes. But another huge concern is lead pipes. Here's Mayor Barrett in January and the resignation of then-Health Commissioner Bevin Baker after families were not properly alerted when high levels of lead were found in children in the city of Milwaukee.
I expect more. Our residents expect more. And we have a responsibility to do what has been entrusted to us as leaders in government.
We're having a conversation about water challenges here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dave Strifling stays with us. He's director of Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. Your questions, concerns about water quality, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. What do you think of Michigan's announcement recently that it's no longer going to offer free bottled water to Flint residents? Do you worry about water quality where you live? Do you struggle with water quantity? How has that impacted your life? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dave Strifling, lead challenges aren't just a Milwaukee problem, but they're an older city problem. What lessons can we learn from Milwaukee's treatment of lead challenges that could be applied to other older cities?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to make. This isn't just a Milwaukee issue. If we look at Chicago, for instance, I've seen estimates that that city has up to 400,000 lead lateral issues. And so I think the lessons are that Milwaukee has done some things well and some things not so well. I think other cities could learn from Milwaukee's program, for example, to provide free filters to families that are facing these issues, or to pay part of the cost of replacing those laterals. On the other hand, I think, you know, maybe a harder lesson from Milwaukee is the importance of providing full information to the public and being completely transparent with the public about the magnitude of the risk. But
transparency is difficult when you consider the litigious nature of what's going on here, the lawsuit potential.
Well, that's true. There is some risk of that, but I think the public health concerns have to trump any litigation-related fears at this stage. I mean, and being transparent with families about the fact that they're being served by a lead lateral, or this is what to do if you have a lead lateral, this is how to install filters, following up with families when their child has elevated levels of lead in the bloodstream, those aren't issues that are going to affect any litigation standing. And really, I think most people understand that this is a generational problem. This isn't something that's going to be solved in a year or two. This is something that cities really need to plan for and assess. And as we talked about at the outset, to bring all sorts of experts to the table to discuss, not just policymakers or lawyers, but engineers and scientists and health professionals as well. So
Let's bring in Sarah now, joining us from Mequon. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you. My question had to do with people who live in Milwaukee who are not homeowners but rather renters. I know from experience working in some of the most impoverished areas in Milwaukee that many times the people who live there and whose children are exposed to lead don't own the homes. They're renting them from landlords. So my question is, are landlords, or how can we hold landlords accountable for making sure that their tenants have lead-free water, whether it's from paint, whether it's from laterals? How do people who rent these units get any recourse when their children could potentially be exposed to lead?
Great question, Sarah. Dave Strifling.
It is a good question, and believe it or not, I also hear this quite a bit from my students, Marquette students who live in housing, of course, that they don't typically own, and have learned about this issue and are becoming concerned about it. Of course, it's a much broader issue than Marquette, but it just shows that it's very difficult to force landlords to do anything about this problem. You know, let's say you're a tenant, you go to the landlord, and the landlord says, well, I don't think that's an issue, and I'm not going to do anything about it. It's almost impossible for a renter to force the landlord to do anything about it, absent some compulsion from the city. Now, if one could show that one had been sickened or otherwise negatively affected by lead in the water, then maybe you have a tort claim against the landlord for knowing about the problem and not doing anything about it. But
and explain what a tort. Yeah, explain what tort is.
Right. So that would be a legal claim that the landlord should have known or should have done something about the problem but didn't do it. In other words, a negligence claim, something along those lines. But nobody wants to get sick or have lead poisoning before a landlord does something about the problem. That's not the outcome that we all want. So I think the recourse is limited, unfortunately. Hopefully some of these programs that the city is putting in place will address that, but that's a tough nut to crack.
Let's go to Rachel now in Muskego. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for taking my call. I live in Muskego, but my daughter owns a home. She's a new homeowner in Bayview and has a 10-month-old infant and did not realize she had lead in her water. And even though she had a home inspection, water testing wasn't part of it. And so now she is double purifying her water, one with a tap purifier and then one that the city gave her, which is a electric one. We don't know how long they're going to provide filters. It was limited as to where you could even get a free filter from the city. So that's one area that's still a concern for us, is how long is this going to be necessary. The other thing I'm concerned about is I don't realize how many people many people don't realize they have the lead in their water, and I encourage them to go to the city website, the water quality site, and you can find your address and find out whether you have lead or not, because many people who have little children don't even know that they have lead pipes.
Rachel, thanks so much. Dave, this can be expensive and it can be time consuming, this process of purifying water.
Yeah, those are both great points. You know, filters work, but they have to be used correctly, they have to be maintained, they have to be installed correctly. It's not always an easy process, and so that's another one of these places where the public really needs to be well informed about what they need to do. The caller's other point was a good one also. We had Mayor Barrett at a conference at the law school in 2016 with Mark Edwards from Virginia Tech, who's a national expert in this area, and at that conference, Mayor Barrett admitted that even he didn't realize that his home was served by a lead lateral until these issues started coming to the forefront. So I think it's quite common, actually, for homeowners not to know that they're being served by a lead lateral. And the caller's also correct that the city's database has now been updated at least to show where the city believes these things are. Of course, if you're in an older home, like before 1950 and maybe even built before 1960, this is something you should be investigating.
Well, let's go to Sarah in Milwaukee, whose home was built in 1926. Sarah, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I live in on the south side of Milwaukee and know that my lines are lead laterals. And I actually have four young kids. And when all this kind of came to light, I thought, before I go getting all upset about this, let me do my own research. So I went to the hardware store and I bought a water testing kit. And since then, I test my water about three or four times a year, every few months. And the only thing that I have discovered is that I have exceptionally good water, that I have no bacterias or leads or nitrates or anything like that. Everything looks very, very good every time I've ever tested it. Beyond that, all of my children have been lead tested as part of their routine medical exams, and none have come back with any kind of indication of lead poisoning. So I think before we get, you know, too excited about this or too anxious about this, it's important that we do our homework and do our research, because this is an expensive problem that does need to be addressed, but I don't know that it's crisis proportions at this point.
Sarah, thanks. Testing her own pipes with her own water kit. Dave Strifling.
Yeah, so the caller makes some good points. Milwaukee is not Flint. Milwaukee is not Flint. One of the things that Milwaukee does that Flint didn't is to add a chemical to the water that is supposed to, anyway, keep the lead from flaking off of the inside of the pipe. This a chemical, which is called orthophosphate, forms a coating on the inside of the pipes, and it's an anti-corrosive measure. So it's possible that you could test your water again and again and again and not find any lead because this chemical is doing its job. The worry is that this isn't sort of a uniform process for lead to come off the inside of the pipe. It could flake off in chunks, and so you could test and test and test and get clean, and then all of a sudden there's a high concentration, a spike of lead that's coming through. So certainly it's a good thing to be testing your water. I wouldn't advise anybody not to do that, but at the same time, it's not foolproof just because you don't know when that spike of lead is going to come through, be jarred off the pipe and come through your tap.
Dave Strifling is with us. He's director of Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative, and he's organizing a water conference next week called Lake Michigan and the Chicago Megacity in the 21st Century. You can join in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234, particularly Milwaukee residents. How are you dealing with concerns over lead in your water, and how has it impacted your family? What about your schools? Wisconsinites, are you concerned to drink your own water? And how are you getting water if you aren't drinking what's coming out of your tap? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Dave, let's take a look at this conference, this megacity conference you're organizing. What are you trying to bring together here for this conference on the 17th?
Sure. So I mentioned previously the conference we hosted in 2016, and that one focused primarily on drinking water and largely on the lead in water issue. And so we're not repeating that focus this time around. The Megacity Conference is continuing a theme that the law school has used a couple of times on the order of regional cooperation in the Chicago megacity. So that's the region stretching from northwest Indiana through Chicago up into Milwaukee and its northern suburbs. And so for this megacity conference, we wanted to focus on water. And so we're going to be looking at questions related to whether the Chicago megacity should use Great Lakes water as a tool for economic development, the responsibilities, corresponding responsibilities that the region and its people have to protect the Great Lakes, and the difficulty of delivering a safe drinking water supply in a megacity. So we often see drinking water supply as one of the major challenges that megacities face, and so we'll talk a little bit about the lead in water question and other challenges that primarily the city of Milwaukee and the city of Chicago face in that respect. But we also want to know, how can these cities work together to solve some of these problems and not just proceed in isolation? So I think it's going to be an interesting discussion. We've got a lot of great speakers coming, and I think we're going to have a really good crowd as well.
So how do water challenges in smaller areas compare to those as would be defined as megacities?
Right. So, you know, again, going back to lead, I think, you know, we're talking a lot about Milwaukee and Milwaukee residents, but this isn't something that just affects Milwaukee. It's something that affects all older communities. But moving beyond lead, I think there's a real tension in Wisconsin and really an unexplored tension between groundwater and agriculture. And what we've seen in a number of parts of Wisconsin is that agriculture is having significant effects both on water quantity and on water quality. And so for folks in rural areas who are dependent on groundwater, these issues aren't something that they can ignore either. For example, in Kewaunee County, we've seen the terrible contamination that's happening in groundwater, fairly shallow groundwater, actually, that's believed or alleged, at least, to result from overspreading of manure on the ground. In the Central Sands region of Wisconsin, we've seen reports of lakes and rivers and other water sources completely drying up in the summer months because of overpumping of groundwater through high-capacity wells for agriculture to extend the growing season and increase crop density. You wouldn't think of Wisconsin as a state where you need irrigated agriculture, but it's being practiced more and more. So I think those are issues that we need to look at in our rural areas as well. Of course, agriculture is part of the fabric of our state. It's part of our heritage, a main part of our economy. And I'm not suggesting that we engage in a war on farms here, but we need to live more in harmony with farms and the environment as opposed to this tension that I've been describing.
On that point, let's bring in Kurt now in Madison. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. I live in Madison, but I have an organic hay farm up in Shawano County. And Dave is exactly right with respect to these issues in the rural areas. And I think I remember the story about Cryptosporidium in Milwaukee. I think that was based upon a manure issue from a farm upriver from Milwaukee. So I want the listeners to understand that all of these ag issues affect cities as well. And I was at a presentation last week in Madison where a number of farmers showed up. And these are farmers, not CAFOs. And it's very important also for the listeners to understand the acronym CAFO and what CAFO stands for. CAFO stands for Confined Animal Feeding Operation. And the family farm is not related to these CAFOs. If the listeners could simply Google CAFO and they'll get a pretty good understanding of what the issue is with respect to the CAFOs. But water quality is significant. I was surprised to hear at this meeting in Madison that there have been nitrate poisonings of infants. There have been MRSA infections in kids that were swimming in waters near these CAFOs with open cuts. It's a huge, huge problem in the state of Wisconsin.
Kurt, thanks so much for the call. Milwaukee health officials say lead from paint poses the great risk to local families. Mayor Tom Barrett is now accusing the paint industry of trying to shift the blame to contaminated water in an effort to refocus the liability in lead poisoning among children. We're going out from that, looking at the rural areas as well. Kurt mentions farms, CAFOs, looking at lead in water, also water quality across the state here on The Morning Show, talking about the challenges. Dave Strifling is our guide. He's director of Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. You can join in with your questions, your observations at 800-642-1234. Do you worry about water quality where you live? Do you worry about water quantity? How has that impacted your life? How do you approach it? 800-642-1234. Back after this news on the Ideas Network. Congress banned lead plumbing supplies more than 30 years ago, but up to 10 million homes nationwide still have lead service lines, which supply water to homes. About 74,000 lead service lines are in Milwaukee. The city has a program to split the cost of replacing lead pipes with homeowners, but so far, Only about 1% have been dealt with. We're talking about these water issues here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dave Strifling stays with us. He directs Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. He's organizing a water conference next week called Lake Michigan and the Chicago Megacity in the 21st Century. You can join in with your questions, your stories, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Cheryl now, joining us from Bayside. Hi, Cheryl.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering if he could discuss, I don't think this has been touched at this point, certainly buying into the fact that health care should trump all other concerns, particularly when you think of down the road health care costs and all the other associated costs. It strikes me that the city of Milwaukee should just be replacing these laterals. I suspect that many homes were built with the laterals included in either city or big construction costs. Homeowners, just as a city, didn't realize the implication. And perhaps, I realize that's very costly, but perhaps there could be some determination of household income and that kind of sliding scale participation, because it just seems to me we're waiting for additional costs to pile up long term.
Cheryl, thanks. And Dave Strifling, what about that? What about having a sliding fee schedule here for replacing these lines?
Well, I think the financial piece of this, figuring out that end of things, is really the tough part. And the utility had been handicapped because it was unable to use ratepayer dollars to replace the private side of the laterals. Again, that's the side from the property line to the home. There is a new piece of legislation that was passed this year, still being worked out exactly how it will work, but it's called the Leading on Lead Act, and it allows, at least in some cases, the utilities to collect increased rates, to collect additional rates, funds via rates, and use that money to replace lead service lines, either via grants or loans or other mechanisms. And so that's really an innovative policy, and Wisconsin's one of the few states to put something like that in place. And so maybe that's a vehicle that something like that could be used to help address the problem. And that's another area where the caller's idea could come into play, that these grants or funds could be available for lower income folks, maybe on a sliding scale.
Cheryl, thanks. Let's go to Clyde now, joining us from Platteville. Hi, Clyde.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I had a comment with regard to the lead pipes. We live in a house that was built in 1910. We've lived in it for 32 years, and it had a lead service line. And right after we moved in, I was approached by a professor from the university that wanted to test our water for lead, which he did for several months. And he came back and said there was no sign of lead in it whatsoever, and he couldn't figure out why. And I've been a handyman my whole life, and whenever you take apart a water line, there's always a buildup of lime and iron on the inside of it. And I told him I figured that that was probably the situation. Well, there is a program in our community for replacing lead water lines, and I thought, you know, probably should have that done. They're working on our street. So we went ahead and arranged to have our water pipe replaced this past summer, and I saved a chunk of the line that they took out, and sure enough, it was, you know, had a thick coating of lime and iron. And so I think as long as the pipes aren't disturbed and as long as you aren't running a chemically treated water through there that dissolves that lime and iron, odds are you're not going to have a lead problem.
Clyde, thank you so much for your story. Dave Strifling, insights from what Clyde was saying there.
Yeah, this is about risk. You know, that it's not, no one's saying that if you have a lead service line, you're absolutely going to have lead in your water. But what you're really doing is drinking water that's coming through a lead straw. And so, as I mentioned with respect to the previous callers and earlier callers' comment, you could test the water again and again and again and get nothing. But then, for some reason, the pipe could be disturbed. Either there's construction in the area or something else happens, and you do get a spike of lead coming through. The odds of that are reduced if your city is following proper engineering practices and adding chemical to the water that will reduce the corrosion potential and keep the lead on the inside of the pipes, but you can never totally eliminate that risk unless you take the pipe out.
Clyde, thanks. Let's go to Tom now in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
My question is, can you put the water in a pitcher, and if lead, the lead will drop to the bottom of the pitcher in a day or two and just drink the top part of the water? Does that seem like something?
Tom, thanks so much. Dave Strifling, what about these water filters, like a Brita filter, for instance? Do they do the job?
Brita filters do not remove lead. You need a particular kind of filter, and that's something that you should be hearing about from your city. If you have a lead service line, they should be telling you, if not providing the kind of filter that you need, telling you the type that you need. I don't have the precise number at my fingertips here, but there is a particular type that works, but it's not the, you know, sort of cheaply available Brita pitchers or other filters that you can just attach easily to your tap. It's a particular kind of a filter that's effective.
And the filter, you really have to follow the directions and make sure you're using it correctly.
Exactly. That's part of the challenge here, is making sure that it's installed correctly, that the cartridge is maintained and replaced every so often. You know, we've all got these kind of regular household maintenance, and we know how it sort of gets pushed off into the future from time to time, and you can't let that happen with respect to your water filter.
You had mentioned Madison earlier in the conversation. Are there some smaller communities, small cities, that have taken proactive steps on this and seem to be working?
So Madison is the community that's always held up as the prime example of a community that really took positive steps to eliminate the lead laterals from its system. I'm not aware of any other communities around the state that have done that. That's not to say that none have. I just haven't heard that. But as I said earlier, even if you take all the lead laterals out, you can still have lead in water due to fixtures in your home or pipes, plumbing inside the home that you don't reach when you remove the lateral. So you really need a comprehensive inspection of that plumbing if you're in an older home and you want to make sure you get all the lead out. And of course, that doesn't even address the other sources we've talked about, lead paint and lead in soil.
And it's difficult, too, if a city is not as affluent as, say, a Madison, to be able to offer options for residents.
Absolutely right. And I think that's part of the reason that Milwaukee is really struggling. Obviously, the economic climate in Milwaukee is a lot different than it is in Madison. You mentioned the 11% of Milwaukee children that have elevated levels of lead in the bloodstream. Many of those are in our poor zip codes, and that's what makes this such an intractable problem from the financial end of things. You can't just depend on the homeowners, landlords, property owners to foot the bill to replace these lines. It's just not going to happen.
So, Dave Strifling, where do we go from here? What would you like Wisconsin to do, to consider, as it comes up with solutions for water challenges?
Wow, that's a million-dollar question. I think we'd have to take that on an issue-by-issue basis. But, you know, when you look at any of these issues, I think we can come back to where we started and say these aren't challenges that any one person can address alone, whether that's an engineer, a scientist, a policymaker, a lawyer, a health specialist, a doctor. We need input from all those experts to come together and face these challenges and come up with innovative solutions. And I think we see that starting to happen in with respect to some of these challenges. But the mountain that we face is really huge when you look at 75,000 lead laterals in Milwaukee, or over a third of wells in Kewaunee County that are contaminated with nitrates. Very difficult challenges, and it's going to take major efforts by municipalities and state governments and even the federal government to address our decaying infrastructure for water. The financial piece is huge, the scientific piece is huge, and we've all got to work together.
And the challenges with water, they didn't happen overnight. These have been incremental decisions along the way, have they not?
Absolutely. Lead is a perfect example of that. You know, these are decisions that date back a century or more in some cases when awareness of this problem was much less. And in fact, lead was recommended for use in laterals due to its strength and durability. So, you know, these are challenges that will continue to arise as we go into the future. They're not going away. Just like our bridges and highways need maintenance, so does our water infrastructure. And the estimates for what we need are mind-boggling. If you look at EPA or other agency estimates of how much we need to spend on this over the next decade, just to stay where we are, we're talking about trillions of dollars that's needed nationwide. So that's something that we really have to face up to as a society and understand where we need to go with this.
As we start to wrap up here, Dave, do you suspect we're going to see more litigation on this front, more finger-pointing?
Well, you wonder if things are going to get worse before they get better. And look at what happened in Flint. That has spawned all sorts of litigation. And again, Milwaukee is not Flint, but if folks begin to get sick or show lead poisoning, especially lead poisoning in kids, I wouldn't be surprised to see that outcome. And you talked earlier about how lead paint manufacturers are starting to point the finger at water as a potential alternative source of lead in the bloodstream. That's how it could happen, too, that you'd look at existing litigation over lead and see that expanded to include water as well. I don't think that would be a surprising outcome.
Well, Dave, thank you for being with us, spending time with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dave Strifling is director of Marquette Law School's Water Law and Policy Initiative. He joined us as we looked at water issues affecting Wisconsin. Conversation doesn't stop on this. On April 17th, the Marquette University Law School and the Journal Sentinel, they're hosting a conference titled Lake Michigan and the Chicago Megacity in the 21st Century. This hour of the morning show was produced by Brianne Chasso and Colleen Leahy. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.